And welcome to Miscellaneous with Susanna Sabin. And today we have Bridget Smith on, and this is her.
It's a pleasure to be on Star this morning.
And our theme for Miscellaneous today is Forgotten Inventors. And we're going to talk about three pretty interesting people. The first of which, do we want to go with Leon Theremin first?
Why not?
Okay, so the first of which is Leon Theremin. And he was a musical guy. He was this Russian guy. And Bridget will tell you more about him.
So Leon Theremin was a Russian cellist, and he invented this device, which has now become known as the theremin, in the 1920s. And most people have forgotten about it because more advanced synthesizers and electronic music producing instruments have come out since then. But it was used a lot in actually very old school film noir films and old horror films to create the sort of mysterious sound, and it's actually a very suspenseful instrument, and it's easy to play but hard to master is how they describe it.
Yeah. And let me just play a quick clip of him playing his instrument in a demonstration a little while ago so you can hear what it sounds like.
Электромузыкальный инструмент Therminvox – это первый инструмент такого типа. Это песенно-голосовой инструмент. В нем управление мелодией достигается посредством влияния на электромагнитное поле около инструмента.
And that was a clip of Leon Theremin in his early days, actually, right after the invention of this thing, giving a demonstration in Russia. So it's pretty cool. So what is the theremin? Like, what makes it special?
Well, it pretty much consists of two wands that produce an electric field. And on a bar, you have dials for amplitude and frequency. So you can set the musical range of the instrument as well as the volume. And what you do is you actually stick your hands into this field, which makes this one of the most difficult instruments to play because you have absolutely no reference. You have, like, no frets, no keys, no nothing. So it's all done with your hands as they interact with this electric field. And that's pretty much the theremin. It's the invisible instrument, essentially.
Wow. And so for his day and age, it was pretty out there for, you know, to play an instrument. I heard a lot of people, yeah, like you said, the invisible instrument, like, there's just no reference point.
It's and very difficult.
You're in a field, like, so, yeah. So, like you said, it's being used a lot in modern days. It was kind of the precursor to, like, all the electronic music we have now.
And the musical wonder that is the 80s.
Yeah. And the Beach Boys, of course. The beginning of Good Vibrations is the theremin. Or there's some conspiracy theorists who think it's a variation of the theremin. It's not a real theremin, but you can say it's
That's
a theremin.
That's what they say.
Yeah, and he was just this guy. I did a little reading up on him last night, and apparently, so he was a big fan of Lennon, and he first demonstrated it to Lennon. That's how he kind of got his jump. That's kind of how, like, the word spread about the theremin was Lennon really liked it. So he started doing demonstrations all around Russia, and he eventually moved to America to try to market it. Unfortunately, it was right around the stock market crash, so that didn't go so well. But apparently he was doing industrial espionage for the Russian government while he was in the United States.
Not helping their reputation much.
No, not very much. But yeah, and it has, like, you know, our theme today is forgotten inventors, but there's with all three of the people we'll be covering today, there's kind of an underground following that's very strong. And there are a lot of people today who play the theremin. And I have a song that we'll play a little bit after we finish up this bit. That's a guy who does his own theremin recordings by replacing the voice and recordings with a theremin. It's very interesting. Also, TED Talks had this woman come on and do this performance. So it still has a cult following, so to speak.
Very underground, but still there. Sort of become a hipster instrument in its own way.
Yes. So yeah, moving on to our next forgotten inventor, who, you know, for a forgotten inventor, he's a little more famous than these other people, I'd say. He's kind of infamous. Again, has his own little underground pop culture following. Nikola Tesla. This guy was an inventor during the time of Edison. He was born on July 10th, 1856, in the Austro-Hungarian Empire. His parents were Serbian. His dad was a priest and really wanted him to be a priest too, but obviously that didn't work out so well. His mother was an inventor as well. She invented, like, little household appliances, some of which we actually use today, and he was heavily influenced by her. She actually invented the mechanical egg beater. So, when you're trying to make those pancakes, everybody, remember Nikola Tesla's mother. So he was a strange guy throughout his entire life, pretty much. He always had a passion for, like, physics and mathematics, and when he was a kid, he saw this picture of Niagara Falls. And he was like, I am going to capture the power of Niagara Falls. And of course, people were like, you're crazy. You live in Austria and you're a kid. But of course, he proved them wrong. One of the major things that Nikola Tesla brought us, along with many other inventors, of course, because, you know, it's never a one-man thing. Everyone builds on each other. But he was a very strong proponent of AC power, so alternating current instead of direct current. And he actually invented the AC induction motor, which is what we use in, like, almost everything today, from industrial machines to, like, fans. And apparently, legend has it, the idea came to him when he was walking in the park with a friend, and he just, like, was like, AC induction motor, and he knelt down and drew a picture of it in the sand, and there it was. So he was just a genius from the very beginning. He could do integral calculus in his head, apparently. He could memorize entire books. He could, like, just quote passages off the top of his head. He was one of those people, just, you know, all around brainiac, really. And he became kind of obsessed with his induction motor. and he worked for various electrical engineering firms and, you know, kind of perfected his, well, he didn't perfect things. He thought of things in his head and perfected them there and then built them. But he took this idea around to various people in Europe and it just wasn't catching fire. So he decided to move to glamorous New York, which, of course, in the 1900s, or rather the late 19th century, wasn't so glamorous. He hated it there, actually, because it was, you know, it was right in the midst of the Industrial Revolution. It was filthy and sooty and just kind of impoverished. But he got a job right away because he had letters of introduction papers from a friend who was also friends with Thomas Alva Edison, inventor of the light bulb, of course, as you must know. And so this mutual friend of theirs wrote this letter of introduction, and it said, "My dear Edison, I know two great men, and you are one of them. The other is this young man." So it was very high praise. Of course, Edison hired him, because who wouldn't? And he worked tirelessly for this guy. And they were very similar people. Like, neither of them slept very much. They were both really obsessed with their work. However, Tesla was a little more obsessed with his work than Edison was. He was a little more into it for the work itself instead of whatever the work would yield in the future financially. But when he was working for Edison, Edison famously joked, like, "If you do this, I'll give you $50,000. And Tesla took him seriously, came to him after he did his work, and then Edison was like, "Once you're truly American, you'll get an American joke," which was kind of an unpleasant thing to do. And he immediately resigned, thus retaining his dignity. And from that moment on, if we're living in the world of comic books, Tesla and Edison became arch nemeses. And then, you know, word started to spread that this genius was digging ditches for a living and didn't go over too well with some people. And he was hired by some investors. Well, hired. He was supported by some investors to start funding for this Tesla electric light company. So he invented this really beautiful arc light. It sold really well. He didn't get any money from it. It all went to the investors, but this really put him on the map with the big money in the electrical engineering racket of New York City in the late 19th century. I'm really romanticizing these things. But anyway, one of these people who he got connected with through these big investors was a man called Westinghouse. And he was very big in industry, and he agreed to fund Tesla's alternating current motor, which was like a dream come true for Tesla, because he'd wanted to build this thing and you know, make it popular for, you know, most of his career. And it finally happened. But in walks Edison, right? And Edison is a huge propagator of direct current electricity. So in order to smear the reputation of alternating current, Edison decides to show how dangerous it is by taking some dogs and horses and electrocuting them publicly with alternating currents in order to propagate his direct current. Of course, like, it's kind of a frightening thing. It didn't really work as a smear campaign as much as he wanted it to, simply because AC, if you're talking about getting it from one side of the country to the other side of the country, is a lot more efficient. AC can actually travel far distances, while DC can't really. On the other hand, DC is used in most of our, like, handheld electronics, like our phone and our laptops, because of battery power. But in a time where the main thing was trying to get people's homes lit, AC was a lot better. Also, another smear campaign thing was this man who worked at this prison illegally purchased an AC motor and used it to perform the first electrocution ever done on this unfortunate ex-murderer. But really what redeemed AC motors was the Chicago World's Fair of 1893. It was the first all-electric fair. Very exciting. It was, you know, a visual spectacle and all brought by alternating current electricity. So that really put the AC motor on the map. It started to become really popular. And it was from this success at the Chicago World's Fair that Tesla's Niagara Falls dream came true, the one he had when he was a young kid. Westinghouse brought some other people in to finance this project to harness the power of Niagara Falls with AC motors. And they'd had this contest going on with, you know, invent me a way to harness this power. And there were a bunch of pretty failed projects. One that, you know, operated on pulleys and straps and buckets and, you know, just crazy stuff. And everyone doubted about, you know, whether this AC power would work for Niagara Falls. And it was a long, very financially taxing process. People kind of lost faith in it. Everyone except for Tesla in the end. And when it was a success, there ended up being no profit for Tesla. Westinghouse asked him to surrender the contract they'd written earlier, which gave Tesla a bunch of royalties so he could sell it more profitably. And Tesla, being a fairly nice guy, tore up the contract and was like, fine. And that was the beginning of the end for Tesla financially. Throughout his life, there was a series of, you know, huge financial feats. Because this guy had big ideas. After this whole, after the Niagara Falls project went down, he built this lab, and he started doing a lot of work with. He was trying to elevate frequency, and he solved this problem with probably one of his most famous inventions, the Tesla coil, and from the Tesla coil came this idea of his, which essentially was radio. He wanted to extend wireless signals through the raising of this frequency. And he actually invented this remote control boat, like way before remote control was even a possibility, like was even like on the table as something people were striving for. He was like, here's a boat. And I'm operating it with this remote. And it was really far beyond what anyone had ever considered technologically at that time. And he really was, in a sense, a precursor to robotics. Because one of his main driving forces was he wanted to create a world without war. Without the loss of human life. He wanted war to be, quote, a spectacle of machines. And this remote control project was part of that. And he actually filed a patent for, you know, the basic radio before Marconi did. And Marconi, of course, is, you know, who we all think of as the famous inventor of radio. But it's never as simple like as that, really. So basically, Marconi had invented this device that could send a signal barely across a pond, like the typical, you know, saying about this invention of his was it can't hop across a pond, like it's a really bad signal. While Tesla's had invented like a stronger signal using what was called the Tesla oscillator, and he'd filed a patent. And so Marconi started to use Tesla's designs to extend his signals and went to the U.S. patent office, you know, asking for a patent. And he was turned down repeatedly because, you know, Tesla held that patent. But Marconi came from a very wealthy, very prominent family in Italy and had friends who were English noble people. And apparently he pulled his strings. Soon after this patent war started, Tesla's lab burned down, and it destroyed all of his work, like everything he'd worked on for the past decade or so. But he still held his patents. But sooner or later, Marconi, the U.S. Patent Office offered Marconi the patents instead. And, you know, it's never been really investigated, but it's pretty clear from circumstantial evidence that he probably pulled some financial strings to get that done. And he actually won the Nobel Prize for his innovations in radio in 1911, which really broke Tesla, really broke his confidence because, you know, famously, you know, an employee of Tesla said, "Wow, this Marconi guy is really getting you, isn't he?" And Tesla said, "Oh, he's a good man. He's using 17 of my patents. Let him go on." But he stole his patents pretty much and won the Nobel Prize for it. And, you know, with all that, all those unfortunate circumstances, it really broke Tesla down in terms of confidence. And this is when he kind of declined into his larger, what people consider as more poetic projects. He attempted to create a source of energy, a free source of energy for the entire planet, drawing from the resonant frequency of the planet itself and the sun. And it was really interesting, but it never really got the funding it needed. He went to J.P. Morgan, actually, and requested some money. J.P. Morgan gave him $150,000, which, while it was quite a lot in that day, was nowhere near the amount he needed to complete the project. So the project, you know, was built up, and it was never finished, and therefore it failed. It was called Tesla's $1 million failure in the papers. And then, also, according to the Oatmeal comic, which I'll come to later, but according to the Oatmeal comic, this project was shut down because, you know, some of the builders figured out, like, some of his sponsors figured out that you couldn't regulate it. It would be free, which was, you know, his intention. That was Tesla's intention, for it to be free and, you know, universal. But they were like, "No, we want money." Again, romanticizing the situation quite a bit, but that's the story. And also one of these things he thought of right at the dawn of World War II was what the papers called a death ray, but was really, he considered it a peace ray, but it was basically the precursor to the charged particle beams that that Russia and the United States developed during the Cold War. But it was basically meant to disarm planes within 250 feet of these particles. And he sent papers to all the Allied forces. He sent papers to Russia. They accepted it in Russia and sent him some money, but they didn't do much with it. They couldn't really execute the plan, kind of a theme in World War II Russian history. But yeah, like, nobody considered using it. It was called, again, by everyone, a death ray. And this was his, his last big publicized idea, really. He was very old at that time. He was 79 years old when he thought of this. And he was kind of waning. You know, he didn't have much money anymore. And he was beginning to take care of pigeons. Famously, actually, he you know, quote-unquote, fell in love with this one white pigeon he had. The guy didn't have any romantic relationships his entire life. But there was this one white pigeon who he cared for very deeply. Interesting guy. Again, read about that in the Oatmeal comic. And he died at 86. And his nephew came to claim his body and his belongings to find that someone had already taken his body and most of his papers were missing, including the little black notebook he put down all his ideas in. And it's pretty well known that, you know, most of his papers were claimed by the FBI. According to the head of the New York field office, the U.S. government is, quote-unquote, vitally interested in the papers of Tesla. And yeah, there wasn't much else to him. And he was gone like that in 1943, I believe. And that was his life. He was this guy who was, you know, as one of his biographers titled their book, he was a man out of time. He was, his ideas were huge and, you know, way beyond the time in which he lives. And now, you know, while he isn't, while I wouldn't say he's completely forgotten, he's not acknowledged nearly as much as Thomas Edison is. Or many other inventors at the time, for all that he did. But of course, he has like a very strong underground following, as you can hear in the song I played earlier. And also, he was immortalized by an American sci-fi series called Sanctuary, where apparently he turned into a vampire. Go figure. And also recently, the webcomic artist The Oatmeal released a comic called Why Nikola Tesla is the Greatest Geek Who Ever Lived. And it's very good. You should check it out. I'll post a link somewhere. And that's Nikola Tesla. So what do you think, Bridget? Like, who is this guy?
Well, after Susanna's very eloquent explanation of all of his life accomplishments and oddities, if I'm frank, I was really noticing that the plight of the inventor is so similar to the plight of the artist, in that they have an idea, it's very counterculture usually, but they need the support of either, you know, back in the day, the church, or in the time of Nikola Tesla, but big industry, which then, like, rips them off, takes their ideas, mutilates them, and spits them out into something else. Which is just, to me, is really fascinating, because I feel that since we have artists are always considered different from inventors in that, like, oh, they deal with paint, they don't deal with, like, electricity or numbers or metal. But fundamentally, I feel that they experience the same push both towards and against, you know, the man.
Yeah, I agree. And kind of like art, it's just pulling, in Tesla's case especially, it's pulling something from nothing. Just, you know, the pure chaos of your brain yielding this thing that could be of some use to the world. So, yeah, it's a very interesting relationship. I think all geniuses, you know, whatever the field, share a lot of traits, and are usually, for the most part, discredited in their time for whatever reason. Yes, so that is Nikola Tesla. And now, we're going to move on to Hedy Lamarr. Famous actress, yes, you know her? famous Hollywood actress during the Golden Age. You know, total bombshell. She came to Hollywood from Austria, you know, known as one of the most exotic, you know, darkest exotic Hollywood actresses. Just this really beautiful woman. But she had another side too, another side that was a lot more inventive. Haha. That once again, like, not many people know about, but it's starting to garner a huge, she's starting to garner a huge underground, you know, fan base based on her life as an inventor. So yeah, she was born Hedwig Eva Maria Kiesler in Austria, and she spent her pre-Hollywood life trying to escape from this really awful marriage. She was really unhappy. Her husband was this Austrian arms dealer who, you know, held conferences with Nazi generals a lot, and she would listen in, and he dealt mostly in remote-controlled missiles. And she paid good attention to that. She was a very smart woman who'd always loved science. And that was just kind of her background. So she escaped from that marriage. apparently she tells a story where, you know, she knocked out one of the maids and switched clothes with her and escaped through the window. But really, they just got a divorce. Wasn't that heroic? But she met with a big Hollywood producer at the time in Europe before she took a boat over to the United States. And at first, he didn't offer her a great deal for acting, but eventually he did. They had a whole boat ride together, and she was persistent. So when she got back to the United States, she was put in a movie. She got a deal with a studio, and she blew everyone's minds. But she wasn't really your typical, like, Hollywood actress of the time. She wasn't into the whole, you know, drinking and parties scene. She, according to the author of this new book called Hedy's Folly, which is about her life as an inventor, she enjoyed, like, quiet dinner parties with intelligent friends and intelligent discussion. Imagine that, a woman in the 1940s with intelligent discussion. Yes, it's brilliant. And she also had a knack for inventing. She, like, you know, one of her famous, well, not famous, but one of the things, like, she invented that was just kind of a playful thing was this capsule that you put in water that turns into soda. And so one of her friends, George Antheil, he was a composer, they were working together, and they were trying to figure out a way to make a radio signal unjammable. And this was all in the context of World War II, because German U-boats kept, you know, torpedoing these passenger ships. And so she thought, like, what if you can make the signal not be able to be jammed? And they figured out that you could do this by having the signal jump from frequency to frequency at random, basically. And so they invented it, they designed it, and they received a patent for the secret communication system, as they called it, which is a device that allows signals to jump and hop and do that thing. And basically, you know, concisely speaking, this was the backbone for all of our wireless communications that aren't radio. So your cell phone, Wi-Fi, GPS, all of these things are based on this principle of hopping frequencies. And it's pretty incredible. When they invented it, of course, they initially meant it to be used for, you know, war purposes. But the Navy didn't even use it for that. They used it, like, 5 years after they'd received it, after World War II was over, for you know, another purpose. And now it's just kind of snowballed into this, you know, our lives now revolve around this technology to be able to communicate wirelessly without getting jammed. So yeah, that's her. That's Hedy Lamarr. She's basically the mother of your social life, all you 21st century kids. So we have these three inventors. We have Nikola Tesla, we have Leon Theremin, and we have Hedy Lamarr, all of whom basically geniuses, who came up with these great things that aren't really acknowledged by that many people.
A woman inventor, who'd have thought?
Yeah.
In this day and age.
Oh, no.
The kids are crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, like, Bridget, what connects them all?
I would say their connection to war. We can talk about Leon Theremin. And when he originally invented the theremin, it was actually meant as, like, an early motion sensor device so that, you know, if anyone was getting too close, and, you know, this was invented during the Russian Civil War, you would know if anyone was coming. And then we have Tesla's infamous death ray and Ms. Lamarr and her radio jamming. I think it's all very interesting that these, and so many of these artists were, like, anti-war, and these inventors were anti-war, and yet their inventions were, you know, sponsored by and, like, sort of given life by the fact that a war was going on. And, you know, they had to fill this necessity, which was then later on, like, repurposed, and now we have an instrument out of what was originally, like, a motion sensor, and we have, you know, wireless technology, which puts ideas and art all around the world from what was originally meant to get around German U-boats.
Yeah. It's interesting what, you know, the motivations that war can inspire in people. Especially, you know, in World War II, it was kind of a dawn of new technology stemming from that. I'm not saying it's good, but I'm just saying it's interesting how this happens, how, you know, people kind of step up and do things when, you know, when this war is happening and, you know, new technology is needed. And it was a very interesting time, the 1930s and 40s. And so we have these three inventors, and hope they're a little less forgotten now. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Bridget, for coming in and sharing Leon Theremin with us. Really cool guy. And hope to talk to you next week. All right. Thanks.